said that I better make the introduction good because it's a long walk back to Baltimore, Maryland. My home group is called Giving It Back, and I've known the speaker for 25 years.
Oh,
wow. And
He really
lives the program. I know I can behave myself for 1 hour in a meeting, but what I do after that is live in the program. And our next speaker really lives it. I get to see it on a daily basis. He's my best friend. We've been married 18 out of the 25 years. And he's a real saint. He's definitely a saint. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to Floyd.
I'm Floyd, and I'm an addict. It's only by God's grace and mercy that I'm clean today. And I never want to forget that. I got clean in 1989, and this is the first time I've ever done anything like this. So be gentle with me. I'd like to thank George and the programming committee for giving me this opportunity. Anytime I can do anything for Narcotics Anonymous, it's truly, can they hear me?
I can hear you. Here we go.
Move closer.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Work that mic, baby.
Awesome. It's truly a privilege and an honor anytime I can do anything for Narcotics Anonymous, because Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. I started using when I was 9 years old, and how it started was I was with the older men in my family, and they thought it was a good idea to put a shot of liquor down and give it to me. And I guess they thought that I would take that shot of liquor and not like it, and maybe not be like they are. But that isn't what happened at all. And it took off. It took off. And every time I had a chance to get outside of me, that's what I did. It wasn't all a horror story, my addiction. I did have some good times early on. But by the time I was an adult, I was doing hard drugs. And it wasn't about a party anymore. Most of the time it was about me isolating and getting out of myself. And it wasn't a social thing anymore. It was about me copping and running and hiding. I used for 22 years, and I've been in recovery for over 29 years. I'm 60 years old, so I've almost been in recovery half of my life. And you would think that would equal out some which way, but what I found out firsthand is that this is a one day at a time program. And sometimes it's a 1 minute at a time program. And I don't want to forget that. I don't want to forget where I came from. It seems like when I reflect back, you know, around my anniversary every year, I always reflect, you know, how life is going and where I came from. And every time I do that, the good times, I never think about good times. You know, I had a rough time out there at the end of my addiction. I was homeless, hopeless. I was living in a park. I've been a fugitive from justice for like 2 years. I had a pair of dirty clothes in a plastic bag, and I was wearing a pair of dirty clothes. And the paranoia of running from the police for that long, I didn't trust anybody or anything. And what happened was, is like I had things, and I had a life and I had a family. And as I gave those things away and pushed those people away, the corner that I was going to, it just seemed like there was less and less to go back to. So I ended up sleeping in the woods not far from where the corner where I copped, because there was nothing left at the end to go back to. And I was walking down the street, and I was a real catch by then, because I'll tell you what, I hadn't taken it. The last time I had taken a bath was probably the last time it rained. I didn't have a toothbrush or a comb or any of that. And I ran into an old girl that I knew, and she asked me where I was staying. And I told her I didn't have a place to stay. And she says, well, maybe I can find a place for you tonight. And I'm thinking, oh, she wants me. Quite a catch. So she found me a bed to sleep in at her grandmother's house. And I was sleeping alone. Go figure. But her grandmother washed my clothes. And they let me take a shower. And I had a bed to sleep in that night. And in the middle of the night, the fugitive task force woke me up and handcuffed me. At that time, my right arm was paralyzed from passing out on it. And it had been like that for a while. And I went to the emergency room and they wanted to know who I was. So I left the emergency room. So I wasn't getting any kind of help for it. And it was just sort of dangling there. And I can't express the relief it was when they put the handcuffs on me, that somebody had finally put a stop to me. And I never want to forget that. So I went on to courtside jail. I was looking a lot of time. And it took me 35 days to kick that habit. I had been drinking methadone and shooting heroin. And I got really sick. And I sort of did that on a cell floor hanging over a toilet. And this guy used to walk by the cell and make cracks, you know. He had these smart remarks, you know. And he was like one of these guys. He was a big biker, and he was tattooed, and he had those boxing gloves, and he still had abscess all over him. And I thought, oh, I'm gonna avoid a confrontation with this guy, because it probably wouldn't be in my best interest. And he'd say, "How you feeling, man? You never have to do that again." I'm thinking, yeah, okay. So anyway, he was, they would crack the doors and he would go somewhere. And I was wondering, where's this guy go? Is he some kind of a snitch? Does he work in the jail? What's his deal, you know? So one day I asked him, I said, "Where do you go, you know?" He says, "I go to meetings." And he shared his story with me. And it sounded real familiar. And more or less, he told my story. And he told me that he was never going home, that he had been served with papers for the Subsequent Offender Act, and that would be the total of his life. But he had found freedom behind the bars. And I just couldn't, I had no concept of what he was talking about. Back then, there was no N.A. in that jail. So he was telling me that he was telling me about Narcotics Anonymous. So we went to the other fellowship, and he says, "What we have to do is we have to write the administration and get a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in here." And all of a sudden, it's a we thing. And I'm thinking, well, what's he talking about, me doing it? So I followed this guy around the jail. And he could get you on the list to go to the meeting. So I became the guy that you would talk to if you wanted to go to the meeting and get on the list. And he would get out of his cell early and go down there and set up the coffee and the chairs. And it wasn't long before I was getting out of my cell early and going down there helping him set up the coffee and the chairs. And then we had the very first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in Howard County Detention Center. And the guy who came in and shared it is still clean today. And what he always talks about is the amnesia that we get around here. That, you know, no matter how bad things are, that things start getting a little bit better and we forget about where we came from, you know. And he used to talk about people going to rehab. I never went to a rehab. But he talked about people go to rehab, you know, and they get that meal and that nice clean bed to sleep in. And 3 days later, it's like, you know, this food, man. Can't you guys do something better with this food? But I couldn't relate to that. But I could relate to that I never want to forget where I came from. So that's enough about using. Because this thing ain't about using. When you come here, the bottom line is they tell you the very first thing you have to do is don't pick up. Since June 13th, 1989, when I first started my last major incarceration, I haven't had to use. And that is a miracle. I believe in miracles today. I see them every day. I see things happen in people's lives that are beyond my comprehension. I have a life today that is beyond my wildest imagination. And it's all through people giving it away. My home group, I didn't even go through that. I'm from the West Side area of the Free State region. My home group is giving it back. It's on Wednesday nights on the outskirts of Baltimore. And I've been an active member of that home group for over 2 decades. And I've always had a job. And the job that I have now in my home group is I'm the greeter. And I won't give it up. You can be a greeter if you want with me. But the bottom line is if you come to my home group, you get a hug when you come in the door because you can't get past me. And now I got a bunch of guys that hang out with me, or I hang out with them, and you have to go through the gauntlet to get to my home group. And the reason I do that is because a guy called me up one night and he said, I need you to go chair this meeting, and he has a lot of clean time. And I thought, okay, where is it at? And he tells me, and I thought, I've never been there. He goes, well, just be there. I said, are you secretary in the meeting? He goes, no, it's Mike called me and needs a speaker. I said, you're not going to be there? And he says, no. Oh, okay, I'll be there. So I go, and I didn't know anybody there. It was a real big meeting. There's probably just as many people there that are here right now. And I got there early, and nobody said anything to me outside the meeting. And I was sort of just like looking around. Now, I had 20 years at that time. And nobody said anything to me before the meeting. But I didn't either. So I have to always look at my part and everything. So I went in, I chaired the meeting, and I came back out. And I stood around outside. And everybody was like clicking up every which way. And nobody said anything to me. So I finally just like got in my truck and left. And I thought, I got 20 years. I probably had the most clean time in that meeting. And I didn't feel a part of. And I can never let that happen to anybody that comes to Narcotics Anonymous. Because if I felt like that at 20 years, how would somebody feel that's coming there the very first night?
That's right.
So that's what this thing's about. I thought of three things that people gave away to me. And one of them was love. One of them was time, and one of them was wisdom. Now, I don't know if I have any of those things, but I definitely don't know how much of those things I have. Tomorrow's never promised, so I don't know how much time I have. the wisdom, that comes and goes because I can't remember what I did this morning. And but I have love in my heart for members of Narcotics Anonymous. And I don't have to like you to love you. And that's what they told me, probably because they probably didn't like me too much when I first came out. But if I can give away those three things, I might be able to help somebody and in the process help myself. So that's what I try to do today. I try to spread the love, whether I like you or not. Try not to take your inventory because I got a four step I can work on. I don't need to work on yours, but I do. I just don't share it. But I do. Nothing perfect around here. Progress, not perfection.
That's right.
And the wisdom, well, I have heard a whole pile of things, and I've experienced a whole pile of things since I've been here. So maybe I have some, maybe I don't. Greg told me I could come over this morning and get some wisdom from him before I did this. But those are three things that I can't measure, but I can try to give away. And it seemed really appropriate for me to do this meeting because the giving it back thing, you know, I got invited to my home group. I got asked to speak at it like a long, long time ago. And then they must have had a list of all the people that ever chaired it. And they were having this anniversary. And I got called and they said, we want you to come to the group anniversary. I'm thinking, well, do you want me to speak or anything? And they said, no, we're just inviting you. And I'm thinking, I've never been invited. I've had, people said, hey, you want to go to a meeting? But I've never been called by a meeting and invited. So I thought that was neat. And I made sure I was there. And, you know, just there, just like any other meeting. And what happened was I started going to that meeting and people started relapsing. And one day I was left with the key and nobody else was there. So me and my wife, we just kept going and we kept opening the door. And sometimes there was three people or four people. It would be me, her, and whoever we picked up on the way to the meeting. And Wednesday night, I was trying to do like a head count, and there was 40 addicts in there. And it's went up and it's went down, but it seems like it's getting pretty steady at about 35 or 40 people. And that tells me that I did the right thing by keeping the doors open no matter what.
Thank you.
Man, this is just awesome to ever have a chance to be up here and do this. I can't say enough about Narcotics Anonymous. The life I have today, what happened was, is like when I came home from prison, I had a son before I got locked up. And I was contacting his mother while I was away. And she told me she was clean now. Now, that was my get high buddy before it got to a point where I couldn't share anything anymore. I wasn't sharing anything with anybody. So she had to go, and it was mutual. I had to go too. I had illusions of grandeur, and addicts get those. And I had dreamt of this white picket fence, and this family that I was going to rebuild, and how life was going to be so much different. And her brother picked me up from the trailway station when I came home from Hagerstown with a quart of Jack Daniels between his legs and a joint in his mouth, and I was terrified. Here I spent years in maximum security prisons, and I'm standing down there in front of the trailway station in Baltimore, shaking like a little kid. And I didn't know whether to get in the car or not get in the car, but I got in the car. So he takes me out in Harford County, and he says, it's that apartment right over there. And I said, aren't you coming in? He says, oh, no. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? So I went to go up to the door, and people were like coming out and going in, and I walked into a shooting gallery. And my son, he was all dirty, and there was people selling dope in there, and it's like a whole pile of chaos. Back then, we didn't have cell phones. I don't even think we had beepers back in those days. Only the fire department had beepers. So I went to a payphone, and I started making phone calls. And I called my family. Now, I have been estranged from my family for so long. And I've been on the streets and living in prisons. And bottom line is, nobody trusted me anymore. I had burned all those bridges. So they were like, no, man, you can't come here. No, man, you can't come here. And I called an aunt and uncle. And they said, you stay right where you're at. And we're going to have somebody pick you up.
This one's supposed to happen.
Anyway.
Okay. Free yourself.
They gave me a chance for a new way of life. And they helped me get on my feet and get a job. They let me stay at their place. And I went into a meeting, and a guy was like making coffee. I walked to a meeting, and I didn't want to tell him I was fresh out of the joint, because I figured everybody was going to, I thought I was unique. But my story was new. Anyway, this guy, he went around with a phone book, and after the meeting, he came up to me, and he said, hey, man, we're going to give you a ride home. And I said, I'll walk here. I'm not that far. I can walk home. He says, no, we need to know where you live. I go, ooh. He says, because tomorrow night we're going to pick you up. And that's what they did. And then the following night, another guy was in the car that I didn't know. And he said, and the guy who picked me up said, listen, man, I got to work tomorrow night. I can't be here, but this guy's going to pick you up. And they handed me back and forth and got me to meetings. And they did that until I could get a car. And things aren't as small as they used to be. And people they fall through the cracks now. And if people didn't show me the love and give me the time and their wisdom, I wouldn't be standing here. So, years later, I figured that I needed to go back and get my son because I had this guilt and this shame, and I didn't want to leave him in the situation he was in. And by then, I had hooked up with Mary, and I met a lawyer in the program, and he said, you're going to waste your money trying to get custody of a child in Maryland. I said, well, then we're going to waste some money. And he took payments, and he let me come and do some of the work myself. And we didn't go to his office. We went over to his house. And I ended up in court, and I testified for 4 hours. They broke for lunch. They sequestered me. They wouldn't let me go back and talk to any of my family or anything. They made me go eat alone. Wouldn't let me talk to my lawyer, and they put me back on the stand, and I testified for another 4 hours. And I guess they all thought that I was going to try to deny my past, and it was more or less I chaired an 8-hour meeting. and I got absolute custody of my boy, and me and Mary raised him until he went out of my brain. Years later, my uncle, my aunt and uncle, my uncle got prostate cancer, and he was dying. And Mary's dad got cancer, and he was dying at the same time. And Mary took a leave of absence, and she went down and took care of her dad. And we buried him. And 3 weeks later, she left from her dad's house and went over to my uncle's house, And she took care of him the last three weeks of his life, and we buried him. And then we figured we were going to have to do something. He asked me to take care of my aunt. And they were like old enough to be my grandparents. So eventually what we did was we sold her house. We built onto her house. And we moved out. I moved my whole family out there to take care of her. And she lived for another 20 years. And she just passed away last August. And she had Alzheimer's at the end. And the last few years are very difficult. But I couldn't be there for myself. Narcotics Anonymous made it possible for me to be there for somebody else. And that's what this thing's about. So, so now, finally, after all these years, the kids raised, my aunt and uncle are gone, me and Mary finally have some freedom. And 2 years ago, I was clean for about, let me back up a little bit, I was clean for about 9 years and I found out I had hepatitis C. And back then they had all different drugs and I did them all. And the bottom line is I had that hard genotype that they couldn't get rid of. And about 5 years ago, they finally came up with something, and I'm cured of the hepatitis C. But in the process, I have cirrhosis. And one of the byproducts of cirrhosis is what happened to me. And a little over two years ago, my stomach ruptured, and I started bleeding out. And they rushed me to our area hospital, and they couldn't stop the bleeding, and they had to take me to Hopkins, and Hopkins saved my life. And in the process of going from one hospital to the other, I almost slipped away and didn't see no bright light, so there might not be a bright light in my future, but I definitely got to a place where I stopped worrying about the kid and my wife, and it was just between me and my higher power. And so I was there for a few days, and they got the bleeding to stop, and they released me. So I went home, and they had done so many procedures, I hadn't ate anything the whole time. So I went out to lunch, and I went to my home group. I came home, Mary went to take the dogs down to the kennel, and I sat on the edge of the bed and started bleeding out, and woke up with the whole pile of Howard County's finest in my bedroom trying to save my ass. And we went back to the hospital. The minute they saw who I was, they lifelined me to Hopkins again, and Hopkins saved my life again for the second time in 2 weeks. And they didn't let me go so quick after that. After all that, I think that it was time for me to build us. I've always had a relationship with my higher power. But I thought it was time to really get a really good relationship with my higher power. And I've been working on my 11th step for a couple of years now. And what I'm finding out, and it would have been nice to find this out years ago, that when I trust in God, I get a serenity about me, and the craziness stops, and the voices in my head stop, and I can let people be who they are, and I get a stronger acceptance. And that would have been real nice if I picked up on that the first time through the 12 steps. But this is progress. So that's where I've been. And I've seen so many miracles happen in my life. Today, we sort of have freedom. We have a camper, and we sort of camp a lot. And we've been to Hatteras and Smoky Mountains, and we've been to Pennsylvania, and then we came here, and we stopped home here and there, and I got a life beyond my wildest imagination. Because what happened was the first time that happened, they wouldn't let me work anymore, and they put me out to disability, and I didn't have a choice. I thought it was my choice. All the transplant surgeons are standing in the room, and I said, well, when do you think I can get back to work? And what they said was, if you got a transplant, you might be able to work again. And what I heard was, be fine in about 2 weeks, boy, don't worry about it. So I go home thinking I'm going back to work. And I was in denial. But so I had like this thing about work. Oh man, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? So after I laid in the pool all summer long, I figured out work is overrated. And I have an acceptance level of being retired that you wouldn't imagine. I'm telling. So it sort of got lonely, and my wife has a lot of physical things wrong with her too. And about a year ago, she has some things, and it got to a point where she couldn't work either. So we're both retired, and we hang out, and she's my best friend. And we were friends before we hooked up, which is a good thing. What we were doing was we were doing H&I work together. And what happened was is we had a commitment that had men and women in this facility. And we would go there, and we were sharing the commitment. And somewhere along the way, we started sharing hotel rooms. Then we started sharing houses. And then I thought, maybe it's time we get married. 7 years had gone by, So that's my best friend. She's my NA cheerleader. She's backed me in everything that I've ever tried to do. And it's neat to have somebody like that in your life. She supported me through a really nasty custody battle. She supported me in everything that I've done. I'm watching the clock. So I've had all kinds of miracles. My life is a far cry from what it used to be. So I find myself on the beach in Hatteras like a month ago, watching the sun come up with my two dogs. And after 29 years, I said, how did I ever get here? I feel the miracle of recovery. I really, truly do. If you're new around here, give yourself a chance, because the world is your oyster. The only thing now that, I never cared about anything. I never thought I would live to be 20. I used to run around with a real dangerous crew earlier on and live a very crazy lifestyle early on in my addiction. And I didn't care about tomorrow. Well, now all of a sudden I'm 60 years old and I care about tomorrow. I hope the hell I wake up tomorrow. And time is like one of the most important things to me today. So if I can give away my time to somebody that needs an ear or a shoulder, if I can give my love and my compassion to listen to them, whether I don't want to hear it or, I've heard it so many times, but if I can have that empathy and that love for another addict, maybe I'll get some wisdom, and maybe they will too. If you're new around here, please give yourself a chance for that to happen for you. They say happy, joyous, and free. I've been happy, joyous, and free for a long time, but I'm really starting to feel it these days. And I'm just so blessed to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. When do I stop, George? Today, I try not to get involved with the controversies in this program, because I believe that the controversies divide us rather than unite us. They got Facebook pages where they argue about what the world does and all that. And the bottom line is I don't agree with everything that happens in Narcotics Anonymous. but I'll keep my mouth shut and just try to give an example. When I'm involved in service, I try to do things the way that I was taught to do them, and because this thing's really important now. Drug addiction is like taking people out, you know, from Baltimore. And the bottom line is, that's the heroin capital. And every week we get, guess who died, guess who died, guess who died, guess who died. And it's been going on and on and on. I'm seeing a lot of young people coming into the meetings. And I'm seeing their friends. They come in here and they get this little support group and they all start hanging out together. And then a couple of them go out and die. And after 29 years, I've seen a lot of death in Narcotics Anonymous, but I've never seen it like it has been for the last couple years. So I'm thinking that we're the answer today. We're the only answer today. So it's real important that we preserve that. So what I try to do in my little world is I try to do everything the old way, sort of old school. One time I said I'm old school, and they said, you know, I raised my hand in a meeting, and then somebody called me, and I said, yeah, I'm old school. And they go, hey, old school, you know. They thought that was my title or something. But I still do things the way that I was taught to do them when I first came around. And I try to walk this thing. It isn't always easy, you know. Sometimes we have this little thing that sticks on one of the mirrors in our bathroom and it says, God, please put your arm around my shoulder and your hand across my mouth. And you can't begin to think of how many times I have to use that on a daily basis, because I'm smart ass, and that doesn't help. It doesn't help to do somebody like that. So for everybody, I try not to be like that. I'm Floyd and I'm an addict, and I'll keep coming back.
Thank you, Floyd. All right, let's see what we got for the rest of the day. We've got a work.